listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As we've previously reported this past weekend, the United Nations Security Council was the scene of another attempt by the U.S. government to force regime change in Venezuela. Earlier, we brought you the comments of the foreign minister of Venezuela about that attempt. However, resistance to the U.S. effort also came from Russia and China. We bring you first the comments of U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at the UN Security Council this past weekend, followed by comments from the permanent representatives to the United Nations from both the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China. This was U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo Saturday at the UN Security Council in New York.
Good morning. On behalf of President Trump and the American people, I first want to thank Foreign Minister Miguel Vargas of the Dominican Republic, the current President of the Security Council, for scheduling this meeting. My former colleague, Ambassador Haley, lobbied for a year to get the Council to address Venezuela, but her pleas fell on deaf ears. This meeting is long overdue. And you all know why it's overdue. Take Carlos Aquino, a 37-year-old construction worker, weeping over the tiny coffin of his deceased infant son who had died of starvation. Such scenes of misery are now the norm in Nicolas Maduro's Venezuela, where millions of children are suffering from malnutrition and starvation, thanks to a socialist experiment that caused the economy to collapse. This human misery isn't a secret. Stories like this one are well documented by our press corps. You can read about men like Carlos every day. People like him are why the United States has called this meeting. We're here because Maduro has reduced ordinary Venezuelans who once lived in prosperity to rooting through dumpsters to find something to eat. We're here because scores of Venezuelan women, some of them teenagers, have fled Maduro's madness to other countries and in desperation turned to prostitution to survive. We're here because of Maria Vilema, a school psychologist, who said through tears, "We have a government that is dedicated to destroying, not to constructing." Another man, a farmer, named Vladimir Siketa, who never got more than a sixth grade education, but he hoped that his stepdaughter, Gabriella, could fulfill her dreams of being a lawyer. She now says, "Our whole future has been taken away." That future, for her and all Venezuelans, didn't magically disappear on its own. The Maduro regime's failed policies, oppression, and corruption stole that future. The United States is helping to recover a brighter future for Venezuela. We're here to urge all nations to support the democratic aspirations of the Venezuelan people as they try to free themselves from former President Maduro's illegitimate mafia state. The humanitarian situation demands action now. It demands action today. Today, 9 out of 10 citizens live in poverty. Millions lack access to drinking water and food. 3 out of 4 hospitals have been abandoned. 3 million Venezuelans have been forced to flee their homeland, thereby flooding the region and threatening international peace and security. Maduro's prisons are full of political prisoners unjustly behind bars, and the graveyards hold dissidents and protesters that have been killed by this regime. I want to talk to you about just one of them, a member of the City Council of Caracas named Fernando Albán. Just 4 months ago, he came here to this city to meet with the world's representatives who gather here every year during the United Nations General Assembly. He came here to speak about the failures of the Maduro regime and about his hopes for a more democratic and a more prosperous future for his country. After that, he went home. He went home to the country that he loved. Maduro's secret police arrested him at the airport as soon as he landed. He died in their custody 3 days later. And the pathetic explanations for this death have convinced absolutely no one. The time is now to support the Venezuelan people, to recognize the new democratic government led by interim President Guaido, and end this nightmare. No excuses. The United States stands with the Venezuelan people. So far, many other nations have chosen to do the same, and they too have recognized the legitimate government of interim President Guaido. The United States stands proudly with you as we stand together in support of Venezuela. You knew the Venezuelan people did not have a moment to spare. And now it's time for every other nation to pick a side. No more delays, no more games. Either you stand with the forces of freedom or you're in league with Maduro and his mayhem. Some countries have publicly taken former President Maduro's side. China, Russia, Syria, and Iran are just 4 of them. Just this morning, we tried to find a way for this council to speak in one voice in support of the Venezuelan people and the democratic ideals through a presidential statement on this council. But our Russian and Chinese colleagues refused to let this move forward. It's not a surprise that those who rule without democracy in their own countries are trying to prop up Maduro while he is in dire straits. Nor are these countries supporting international norms, as they cynically claim. China and Russia are propping up a failed regime in the hopes of recovering billions of dollars in ill-considered investments and assistance made over the years. This money was never intended to help the Venezuelan people. It lined the pockets of the Maduro regime, its cronies, and its benefactors. But no regime has done more to sustain the nightmarish condition of the Venezuelan people than the regime in Havana. For years, Cuban security and intelligence thugs, invited into Venezuela by Maduro himself and those around him, have sustained this illegitimate rule. They've trained Maduro's security intelligence henchmen in Cuba's own worst practices. Cuba's Interior Ministry even provides former President Maduro's personal security. Members of this body often use their microphones here to condemn foreign interference in internal affairs. Let's be crystal clear. The foreign power meddling in Venezuela today is Cuba. Cuba has directly made matters worse, and the United States and our partners are the true friends of the Venezuelan people. On Wednesday, the Venezuelan people chose to take their country back on the anniversary of the day the dictator Marcos Ximenes Perez was forced out of power back in 1958. We call for Venezuelans to work now, together, to peacefully restore the constitutional government and return the country to a secure, democratic, and prosperous path. As we read reports of peaceful Venezuelan protesters killed or wounded, we also repeat our insistence that Venezuela's security services show restraint. And I want to be 100% clear. President Trump and I fully expect that our diplomats will continue to receive protections provided under the Vienna Convention. Do not test the United States on our resolve to protect our own people. We hope that the international community will support the people of Venezuela and the transitional government led by Juan Guaido. On January 23rd, Guaido declared himself interim president of Venezuela in accordance with Venezuela's own constitution. He made this declaration with the full support of the National Assembly and of the Venezuelan people. Our nations must stand up for the rule of law and support the leader who the Venezuelan people have affirmed as their legitimate interim president. It is our hope that free and fair elections happen as soon as possible. Back in 1961, President Kennedy spoke in Caracas. He declared, quote, "We will be partners in building a better life for our people." America's ambition has not changed since that day. We stand with the Venezuelan people as they seek to build a better life for themselves. And we cannot ignore the suffering or tyranny taking place in this proud nation. Neither should other countries who care about freedom and prosperity. Today, we call on all members of the Security Council to support Venezuela's democratic transition and interim President Guaido's role in it. Thank you.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at the U.N. Security Council this past Saturday. His comments were then addressed by the permanent representative of the Russian Federation to the U.N., Ambassador Vasily Nabenzia.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Мы благодарим госпожу Розмари де Карло за ее брифинг.
Madam Rosemary De Carlo for her briefing.
Господин председатель,
Mr. President,
у нас нет никаких сомнений в том, что сегодняшнее мероприятие создано американской делегацией с единственной целью. Продолжить дестабилизировать ситуацию в Венесуэле, навязывая этой стране свои подходы и рецепты решения проблем, с которыми она сталкивается в последнее время. Заседание, на котором мы сейчас вынуждены присутствовать, это еще один элемент стратегии. Сожалеем, что в эти нечистоплотные игры Вашингтон
втягивается в Совет Безопасности.
Тем не менее, раз уж мы здесь сегодня собрались, хотел бы изложить наши принципиальные оценки
происходящего.
Давайте говорить откровенно. Тема сегодняшнего заседания – это отнюдь не ситуация в Венесуэле,
in Venezuela, as the organizers are trying to present it.
Сегодня, кстати, Совет оказался разделенным по этому вопросу.
Today, the Council is clearly divided on this issue.
Сегодня мы здесь рассматриваем самый, к сожалению, типичный случай того, что называется угроза международному миру и безопасности, созданной угрозой применения силы против политической независимости государства. Авторы Устава ООН, в числе которых, кстати говоря, одних из основных были Соединенные Штаты Америки, пытаясь уберечь мир от подобного развития событий, поместили это предостережение в главу 2.4 Устава ООН.
Included this warning in chapter 2.4, but obviously Washington hasn't opened that book for quite a long time.
Столь грубым вмешательством США во внутренние дела очередного государства нет ничего нового. Американцы не меняли и, судя по всему, не собираются менять свои отношения к Латинской Америке, как к зоне исключительной интересов США, своего рода внутреннему дворику, которому можно делать все, что угодно, без оглядки на интересы проживающих. Речь идет о реинкарнации, так называемой доктрины Монтрео, о чем в своем выступлении в ходе сегмента высокого уровня 73-го
President Trump
openly
spoke during the statement at the high-level segment at the 73rd General Assembly. Back in 1913, President Woodrow Wilson spoke about how the United States intended to teach the Republics of South America to elect good people.
И вот сейчас эта учеба проходит Венесуэла, осмелившись в течение последнего времени проводить независимую политику, не совпадающую с экономическими и политическими интересами смотрящего за западными
ушами.
Я хотел процитировать слова еще одного американского президента, сказанного им в Конгрессе накануне создания Организации Объединенных Наций, одним из отцов-основателей которого он являлся. Он считал это своим главным политическим проектом и искренне верил, что ее создание способно обеспечить человечеству существование без войны конфликтов. Это Франклин Делано Рузвельт. Ялтинские соглашения должны положить конец односторонним действиям, сферам влияния, балансам сил и исключительным союзам, чего пытались достичь веками, но всегда безуспешно. К сожалению, реальная политика США в западном, и не только в западном полушарии, представляет собой разительный контраст с этими высокими справедливыми идеалами. Смена режимов – это любимая геополитическая игра США. Ни для кого не является секретом подрывной линии Вашингтона в отношении Никарагуа. Факт открытого вмешательства США в внутренние дела этого государства подтверждался постановлением Международного суда в Гааге в 1986 году в рамках дела об Иран-Контрасте. Тогда США пытались финансировать никарагуанских повстанцев. Кубинцы прекрасно помнят вторжение в Залив Санкт-Петербург. Чилийцы никогда не забудут роль США в свержении правительства
Сальвадора.
На наших глазах история попыток США навязать свою волю другим народам пополняется
новой.
И это лишь немного из того, что Вашингтон сотворил только в Латинской Америке. Народы Африки, Азии, Ближнего Востока, Тихоокеанского региона, да и Европы. Им есть что добавить к этому списку. На этом фоне высасывание из пальца так называемых доказательств выборов США, равно как обвинение других стран в злонамеренной политике, malign policies, выглядит не только абсурдно, но и смешно. 20 мая 2018 года венесуэльский народ вновь поддержал кандидатуру Николаса Мадуро в качестве президента государства, отдав ему почти 68%. Предвидя такой сценарий, Вашингтон сделал максимум для того, чтобы изначально дискредитировать голосование, бросить тень на обновленные органы власти страны. В частности, имеется достаточно свидетельств о том, что на ряд оппозиционных кандидатов оказывалось жесточайшее давление с тем, чтобы не сняли свои кандидатуры и отказались от борьбы за пост президента. В итоге, использовав как предлог бойкот части оппозиции, США и ряд их союзников приступили к реализации плана по свержению законной власти в этой стране. В этом, как мы знаем из американской прессы, принимали активное участие видные члены Конгресса США.
Actively participated prominent members of the Congress in this of the United States Congress in this process. Prominent members.
Предпринятая по горячим следам попытка госпереворота не удалась. И тогда Вашингтон начал последовательно раскачивать ситуацию, действуя в том числе через организацию американских государств и ряд соседей Венесуэля. Но, как известно, принять антивенесуэльскую резолюцию на заседании постоянного совета ОАК 24 января США продавить не удалось. В организации нет достаточной поддержки этим планам, что показательно. Сейчас мы являемся свидетелем кульминации этих усилий, приуроченных к инаугурации законного президента страны. Экстремистски настроенные противники легитимной власти Венесуэлы, потерпев неудачу в попытке сместить Мадуро, в том числе путем его физического
устранения, including by physically removing him,
избрали максимально конфронтационный сценарий противостояния. 23 января председатель Национальной Ассамблеи провозгласил себя временно исполняющим обязанности президента Венесуэлы. Соединенные Штаты и ряд других стран незамедлительно его признали, тем самым подтвердив, что они либо способствовали, либо напрямую приложили руку к искусственному созданию двойной власти. которая теперь грозит серьезной дестабилизацией внутриполитической ситуации. Советник по национальной безопасности Джон Болтон сделал большевистское заявление об экспроприации всей венесуэльской собственности на территории США. Зато сторонникам оппозиции обещана финансовая помощь. Мы решительно осуждаем тех, кто толкает венесуэльское общество в пропасть кровавой междоусобицы. Соединенные Штаты рисуют нам картину противостояния режима Мадуро народу Венесуэлы. Эта картина далека от реальности. Несмотря ни на что, лидер Венесуэлы пользуется очевидной поддержкой народных масс. Кстати сказать, по данным социологических исследований, проводившихся в октябре 2018 года одной из близких к оппозиции структур, Национальная Ассамблея, лидер которой позиционируется теперь в Вашингтоне в качестве президента, не пользуется поддержкой около 70% венесуэльцев. И еще раз, кстати, о выборах и об осведомленности. Уважаемый представитель Соединенного Королевства говорил сегодня о stuffed ballot boxes в Венесуэле, намекая на то, что выборы прошли нечестно. Для справки, в Венесуэле нет ballot boxes. Там электронное голосование. Поддерживая Венесуэлу, мы прежде всего выступаем против грубого попрания норм международного права, в частности положений ООН, недвусмысленно осуждающих любое вмешательство во внутренние дела независимых государств. Более того, из уст американских руководителей звучат прозрачные намеки на применение силы в виде рассуждений о всех опциях государства. Пользуясь присутствием госсекретаря Помпео, хотим прямо у него спросить, означает ли это, что США готовы применить военную силу против суверенного государства? Именно здесь, в этом зале, должен прозвучать откровенный ответ. Собираясь в Вашингтон, в очередной раз нарушить уставу. Госсекретарь Помпео утверждает, что на стороне Мадуро стоят только Китай, Россия, Куба, Сирия и Иран. Если бы госсекретарь нашел время задержаться здесь подольше, в этом зале, он бы из первых уст услышал, каково истинное отношение подавляющего большинства государств к вмешательству во внутренние дела суверенного государства и политики
последние угодные режима.
Эти страны стоят не на защите режима Мадуро. Они стоят на защите международного права. Возможно, в контексте усердно продвигаемой нашими западными коллегами концепции порядка, основанного на правилах, действия по свержению неугодных режимов законны и даже ими
приветствуются.
Международное же право классифицирует такие акции однозначно как нарушение устава ООН, в частности, его главы 2.4. Мы считаем подобное поведение недопустимым, подрывающим принципы устава ООН и элементарные нормы международного
права.
Хотели бы обратиться также к нашим латиноамериканским
партнерам.
Понимаете ли вы, что в случае вашего допустительства таким действием, завтра на месте Венесуэлы может оказаться любая латиноамериканская страна. Противозаконность того, что пытается сделать Венесуэла, вопиющая. И руководство Организации американских государств берет под козырек и вслед за Вашингтоном штампует угрозу в адрес независимого
государства.
Убеждены, что для решения венесуэльского кризиса нужно сделать несколько очевидных и простых шагов. Во-первых, прекратить иностранное вмешательство и наускивание лидеров оппозиции страны. Во-вторых, приложить все усилия для запуска внутринационального диалога и примирения.
An inter-Venezuelan dialogue and attempts to find a solution through negotiation.
Решающую роль здесь могут и должны сыграть соседи Венесуэлы. Знаем, что подобные инициативы уже
выдвигаются.
Наконец, в-третьих, воздержаться от дискриминационных экономических мер в отношении страны. Ведь не секрет, что нынешний экономический кризис во многом спровоцирован действиями тех государств, что больше всего кричит о страданиях
венесуэльского народа.
Хотел бы внести поправку потому что сказал госсекретарь Помпео. Мы не заблокировали заявление председателя предложенного США. Мы внесли в него конструктивные правки, которые мы убеждены безоговорочно поддержало большинство членов Совета, некоторые из которых
некоторые из которых это уже сделали.
Мяч сейчас находится на стороне американской
делегации.
Но мы не уверены, что такое заявление, основанное на взвешенных оценках генерального секретаря ООН, подтверждающее суверенитет Венесуэлы, недопустимость вмешательства в внутренние дела, уважение к ее конституции, это то, чего добивается
делегация США.
Считаем как никогда важным понизить градус риторики, отказаться от угроз и ультиматумов.
We believe that it's important to lower the rhetoric and to refrain from threats and ultimatums.
Способствовать тому, чтобы в Венесуэле начался диалог в правовом поле, и чтобы ситуация стабилизировалась.
A normal dialogue and negotiation begin in Venezuela and for the situation to be stabilized.
Мы этому готовы способствовать.
We are ready to contribute to this.
Призываем к этому всех.
We call everyone.
Благодарю вас,
to
господин
президент. Thank you very much.
That was the permanent representative of the Russian Federation to the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia, speaking to the UN Security Council this past Saturday about the U.S. attempt to effect regime change in Venezuela by appointing a new president for that country. This was the permanent representative of the People's Republic of China, Ma Zhaozhu, also addressing the council Saturday.
Mr. President,
first of all,
I wish to thank U.S. Di Carlo for her briefing. We have been following closely the current situation in Venezuela and call upon all relevant parties in Venezuela to stay rational and keep calm.
And
bear in mind the fundamental interests of the country and its people to seek a political solution to the issues through peaceful dialogue within the framework of the Venezuelan Constitution. China supports the efforts made by the Venezuelan government to uphold national sovereignty, independence, and stability. China maintains that all countries should abide by the purposes and principles of the UN Charter, especially the norms governing international relations and the principles of international law, such as non-interference in each other's internal affairs, mutual respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity, and refrain from threatening to use force. China always upholds the principle of non-interference in other countries' internal affairs and opposes foreign interference in Venezuela's affairs. The situation in Venezuela belongs to the domestic affairs of that country. It does not constitute a threat to international peace and security, and it is not on the agenda of the Security Council. China is against adding the situation in Venezuela to the agenda of the Security Council. The Venezuela's affairs must be and can only be chosen and decided by the Venezuelan people themselves. We call upon all relevant parties to respect the choice of the Venezuelan people. Maintaining stability and development in Venezuela serves the interests of all relevant parties. We hope all parties can contribute more to Venezuela's stability. We hope that the international community can jointly create favorable conditions for that. Just now, the U.S. delegate made unreasonable accusations against the position of China in his statement. China firmly opposed to such accusations. As is known to all, China has always been committed to the purposes and principles of the UN Charter and respected the sovereignty, independence, unity, and territorial territory integrity of all countries. China does not interfere in other countries' internal affairs. We hope the country that accuses others can do likewise itself. Thank you, Mr. President.
At the root of the problems facing the people of Venezuela is the economic crisis that has been imposed from the outside. This was the permanent representative of Bolivia to the United Nations, Ambassador Sacha Sergio Llorente Solis, addressing exactly that point in front of the UN Security Council this past Saturday.
The international framework makes it clear that any sanctions imposed on a third state outside resolutions of the Security Council are illegal in nature. They are illegal sanctions when imposed personally, unilaterally. The individual that, nation that imposes such unilateral sanctions, the nation that stands behind these economic and financial sanctions, is, if you can believe their brazen cheek, seeking to provide us with a way of resolving the humanitarian crisis.
Allow me to read to you an extract from a report of the Congressional Research Service, which is a body of the United States sanctions.
Situation, and I will read from that report.
Analysts are concerned that the stronger sanctions could exacerbate Venezuela's difficult humanitarian situation, which has been marked by shortage of food and medicines, increased poverty, and mass migration. Many Venezuelan civil society groups oppose sanctions that could worsen humanitarian conditions. Y cierro la cita.
End of
si vamos a hablar de la situación humanitaria, hablemos de quiénes son los responsables, quiénes están detrás de esas sanciones unilaterales, ilegales. Lamentablemente vemos que el interés verdadero de quien solicitó esta sesión no es la defensa de la democracia o los derechos humanos. El verdadero interés es promover situaciones de inestabilidad para usarlas a favor de sus políticas de cambio de régimen y de control de los
and then exploit for the purpose of their own regime chain policies and control of natural resources. They have three interests here, which is control of the oil resources in Venezuela. Not much was made of that in this session. Their second purpose is geopolitical control, and their third purpose
is to se alinean a las políticas de los Estados Unidos.
To cause to bend the knee those countries that have dared not to align themselves with the interests of the United States. I ask the question honestly,
¿acaso no hemos discutido en este Consejo de Seguridad en reiteradas oportunidades las gravísimas consecuencias de lo que se vive ahora en Irak
o en Siria
o en Libia?
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Attempted forced regime change in Venezuela, brought to you by the Trump administration. Washington's gross interference in the internal affairs of this Latin American country is risky, illegal, and the possibility of large-scale violence is very real. One thing is certain, the people of Venezuela will suffer the most. Crosstalking Venezuela's crisis, I'm joined by my guest, Eva Golinger in New York. She is an attorney and author of a new book on Chavez and Venezuela, Confidante of Tyrants. Also in New York, we have Vanessa Newman. She is an author, president and founder of the risk consultancy Asymmetrica, and a native of Venezuela. And in London, we cross to Francisco Dominguez. He is secretary of the Venezuela Solidarity Campaign. All right, Eva, I know you're going to have to leave early during the course of our program, so I'll go to you first here. Do you have any idea how the people of Venezuela think about the likes of Donald Trump, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Marco Rubio determining the fate of Venezuela and its people? Go ahead, Eva, in New York.
Look, I think a majority of Venezuelans obviously are discontent with the situation in their country presently. There's a severe economic crisis. Nobody can deny that. There's controversy over who is the cause of this crisis, how much of it is the result of the government's mismanagement and corruption versus how much of it is the result of an ongoing economic warfare campaign and the sanctions imposed by the United States. But I would say overall, a majority of Venezuelans reject international interference in their internal internal affairs. And certainly, you know, Trump is seen as he is seen around the world as this sort of emblematic figure of, you know, what the U.S. capitalist class looks like, of someone who, despite his rhetoric on not intervening in the affairs of other nations, as clearly shown through his so-called America First policy, that, you know, it's America crush others first. And when we bring back into the course the likes of John Bolton, you know, a salivating war hawk, and then others such as Elliot Abrams, who's a convicted war criminal, obviously, to oversee and operation of regime change in Venezuela, there's a lot of concern over where this is going. Now, there are those Venezuelans in the opposition camp that have been calling not only for the sanctions to be imposed against their own country, despite the impact that it's having on ordinary Venezuelan people, but also for U.S. intervention, including some have been calling directly for military intervention. You know, some people may see that their crisis has gotten to the point of extreme, but oftentimes they would forget that the U.S. military doesn't see colors or ideologies when they go in to invade a country, or when the bombs fall, they're not saying these are only directed at those that support the government. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of naivety on the part of those in Venezuela or outside of Venezuela who are actively calling for some type of military action, or who would applaud the likes of John Bolton or Elliot Abrams supervising an operation of regime change. I mean, I think overwhelmingly that continues to be rejected throughout Latin America.
Okay, Vanessa, in New York, I mean, there was a widely circulated picture of John Bolton with a legal yellow pad, which he obviously wanted the media to say and to see, and it said 5,000 troops to Colombia. Right. I mean, how do you feel, being a native of Venezuela, that outsiders want to determine the fate of the country? I think I would agree with Eva Gollinger. You know, there's a catastrophe being played out in Venezuela in its poor governance, corruption. A lot of issues, but does it need to be internationalized? Right. And have talking about 5,000 troops in Colombia, is that the resolution that most people in Venezuela want to see played out? Go ahead in New York.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I disagree very strongly with what Eva Gollinger said, and also with your characterization. Frankly, I think it's an insult to the sovereignty of the Venezuelan people to have either Russia or the U.S., or particularly Russia, depict this as a U.S. intervention. We have had two decades of horrors under the Chavista regime, which I have well documented in dozens of articles. Yeah, and
but
we
Vanessa,
have thousands of people who have been murdered.
Vanessa,
Wait a minute. No,
would you answer my question?
Do you want to see your country's problems resolved
by outsiders, particularly residing in Washington, D.C.? That is my question. Can you answer it, please?
Our problems are being resolved by us. This is our constitution. Maduro was never supposed to, according to the constitution that Hugo Chavez drafted in 1999, we are abiding by its laws. We, the Guaido regime, the Guaido administration, and the opposition is abiding by the laws that Hugo Chavez wrote in 1999.
Okay.
Maduro is
right.
not.
Let me ask.
Maduro should never have been president
okay,
in 2013.
You don't want
this
to
is not a coup.
You don't
this
want
is
to
a
answer
constitutional
my question.
State of law.
You don't want to
this
answer
is a
my
constitutional
question.
State of
so
law
I will
and
ask
us.
The same question to Francisco. Francisco, how do you feel when you see an outside power, a superpower of the United States that has a quite deplorable history in the Western Hemisphere when it comes to regime change enforcing political facts? It seems like it's being played out all over again in light of all the other failed regime attempts that we've seen in this century alone. We see Iraq, Afghanistan, we see Libya, we see Syria, we see Ukraine. As a matter of fact, what's going on in Venezuela now is very much akin to what happened to Ukraine in 2014. Go ahead, Francisco.
I think it's absolutely outrageous, the very idea that the United States not only organized and orchestrated the crisis, or a great deal of the crisis, that Venezuela is going through, through financial sanctions, the strangulation of the economy, and so forth, and then blaming the victim and creating the conditions internationally of a coalition of the willing to try to intervene in the internal affairs of Venezuela by changing regime in the following manner. by identifying a right-wing or opposition politician, then getting them to actually declare themselves, to self-proclaim themselves interim president, then the United States proceeding to recognize it, and then after that, using all sorts of foul means, you know, just you need to mention only Elliot Abrams to know what I'm talking about, in order to actually proceed to bring about that regime change. This is completely outrageous. And it means, if they were to get away with it, it means that no government in the region, whether it will have left-wing, progressive or otherwise, is safe after their possible successful operation in Venezuela. It is absolutely a region. I think Latin America had enough of this. And most of the region, regardless of ideological differences, actually are very worried and extremely concerned, because they know that this is what it means, and they tend to, most of them oppose military intervention. And it's a disgrace, I must say this.
Okay,
the people from Venezuela themselves actually are
Nobody's talking about military intervention.
For their attack, except for their country.
Well, maybe, John, only the Russians. It's John Bolton that's talking about it here.
Only the Russians. It's Russia's fault.
It's fine. Okay. Let me go to Eva. Let me quote you something that John Bolton said to Fox News. It would make a big difference to the United States economically if we could have American oil companies invest in and produce the oil capacities of Venezuela. So I guess, in this sense, Bolton trumps Pompeo, because Pompeo says it's about democracy. John Bolton, honest as he is, said it's about oil. Go ahead, Eva.
I think it's clear from U.S. interventions around the world that it's never about democracy or human rights. It's about U.S. strategic interests. I think we need to go back a little bit in history, because, you know, Venezuela has the largest oil reserves on the planet. Oil was nationalized in 1976. It wasn't done under the Chavez administration or Maduro. But the oil industry in Venezuela increasingly was being managed as a private corporation benefiting an elite upper class in the country. And what happened was, as poverty grew throughout the 80s and 90s, so did widespread discontent and protests and economic crisis, very similar to things we're seeing today, just sort of on the flip side. And so by the time Hugo Chavez ran for office in 1998, the oil industry, PDVSA, the state-owned oil company, was on the verge of being privatized. The United States oil companies were the primary investors in Venezuela. That did not necessarily change under Chavez initially, but of course there was indication that it would, as he began to deepen what he was calling socialism of the 21st century. And certainly when he announced further nationalization of other Venezuelan reserves in the country, that a heavy crude they were calling bitumen, that was actually oil, you know, in which is the largest place where they have the oil reserves in the southeastern Orinoco River Basin, that's when there started to be even more concern. But even before that, it was as soon as Chavez started saying, essentially, we're not going to allow PDVSA to be privatized, our oil industry will benefit the Venezuelan people and we will manage it. That's when he was ousted in a brief coup in 2002 that was clearly backed and funded by the Bush administration at the time. And in a similar effort as they're doing today with Juan Guaido, opposition leader, you know, the U.S. was the first to recognize this coup de facto government led by the Chamber of Commerce President Pedro Carmona as the interim government of Venezuela to call for new elections. So, you know, those types of interests have continued throughout the country. I think we have to recognize, because there's a lot of tension and passions around Venezuela, there is a severe deep crisis in the country. It's very divided. Yeah. But one of the primary reasons is the fact that from the beginning, when Chavez was first elected by millions of Venezuelans in totally legitimate and transparent elections recognized by the opposition, those that supported Chavez and Chavez himself were never recognized as credible and legitimate representatives of Venezuela by the opposition in Venezuela. That has continued to this day, where they basically keep invisible the millions of Venezuelans who, despite the crisis they're living, who despite would like change and transformation in their country as well, who may not necessarily even like Nicolas Maduro, but they do not want the elite right-wing opposition back in power and to become invisible once again. So it starts with mutual recognition, and from that point on, we have to look to a negotiated solution to this. Not have to jump in. Intervention. Yes.
I have to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Venezuela. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let me go to Vanessa in New York. Eva Golinger mentioned the nature of the opposition. How unified is it? Because, I mean, traditionally it has been like so many other oppositions in the world, divided, a lot of egomaniacs. Why has this upstart been chosen? And is he genuinely popular? Because from what I've learned, less than 20% of the population ever heard of him before he swore himself in as interim president. So speak to the nature of the opposition. Go ahead, Vanessa.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that question. And let me address it step by step. First of all, it is no secret that the opposition had been very divided. The only thing that they could agree on is that they wanted Maduro out. They couldn't agree to unify around elections. There was difficulties. What's interesting about the figure of Juan Guaido, it's true that he was not a household name because he was never one of the leaders of the political parties. But he was very well known for the 2007 student movement. So he came out of the student movement that really brought the movement against the Chavista regime from the ground up. So he's a grassroots kind of figure. And he was well known for that, not well known to the international community, but he was well known within the political sphere for that. What has happened with Guaido is that what's wonderful about him is that he's young, he's brown-skinned, he doesn't look like a European elitist, he doesn't talk like a European elitist, he talks like one of the people, he's married, has a couple of kids, he has no corruption scandal, he has no cola, as we say in Spanish, no tail, so he's a fresh face, unvarnished. And what happened is that he got elected to be the president of the National Assembly because according to Chavez's constitution and all of this, they've been very careful to follow Chavez's constitution, the opposition. It's the turn of Voluntad Popular to have the presidency. So within their ranks, they chose Juan Guaido because of this. Now, it presented an opportunity.
Okay, Vanessa, let me ask you a question. I mean,
he is not self-proclaimed.
Who's his backing? It looks like he has backing outside of the country. I mean, apparently he was in the United States in December of last year negotiating this shift in power or, putting into play a forced regime change plan. I mean, it seems like his backers are not in Venezuela. They're outside here. Francisco, evaluate what we just heard about
the... You can see that with the millions of people who turn out and love him and support him.
Yeah, but they didn't participate in the last election. They boycotted it. So now that, you don't want to participate, but you don't like the outcomes here. Let me go to Francisco in London here.
I am the host
of this program, and I want to go to Francisco because I want to have equal time for everyone. It's not your show. Francisco, because she has to leave in a minute or so. Francisco, is outside interference in Venezuela what's really needed right now? Because shouldn't there be some kind of negotiations here? Because it looks very obvious that Washington really wants to flip Venezuela in its direction. It's been trying to do it for decades. Now they have their Manchurian candidate in place. Their assets of the legitimate assets of the Venezuelan government are being taken away from them under dubious legal pretenses here. And funneling it into a private person. I mean, I don't know if that looks like corruption to me. Francisco in London. How do you react to that?
Yeah, I mean, Maduro, whatever anybody may think about the Maduro government, Maduro has made appeals for dialogue on more than 400 occasions and he's been able to organize at least two sets of dialogue sessions or periods, both of which nearly produced good results, including communiques. In other words, Maduro and section of the opposition showed that it was possible to come to an understanding. Maduro called them to help him to address jointly the problems that the country faces. Now, this is the point in terms of external interference. All of those things are always torpedoed, mainly by the United States, using whatever influence it has on sections of the opposition in Venezuela. Pompeo took the matter to the Organization of American States, the Venezuelan issue, and it was defeated there, where the majority of the countries that participated in the emergency meeting decided that they prefer dialogue and negotiation rather than confrontation, and certainly they made it clear that they did not want external interference in the internal affairs of the country because it helps and exacerbates polarization. And Pompeo later on, after that, 3 days later, took the matter to the Security Council of the United States, where he was also defeated, and where the majority of the countries in that meeting took the decision to actually more or less the same as the Organization of American States. And we are talking about China, Russia, Mexico, South Africa, and other big players. So the United States actually totally ignores these recommendations, these decisions, and these defeats, and continues unabated with their absolutely determinedly fanatic regime change agenda. And all it's going to do is going to exacerbate the situation in Venezuela by making it worse. If the United States really wanted to help Venezuela, what it could do is to lift all the sanctions immediately so that the poor people of Venezuela doesn't have to suffer that much.
Okay, Eva, I know you're going to have to leave soon. I mean, there was a Spanish initiative that over the course of 2 years to negotiate between the government and the opposition. And at the very last, after 2 years of hard work, goodwill on the part of the Spaniards, the opposition just walked away. Why?
Well, I think that that is very important to point out, the fact that Maduro has been calling for dialogue. There have been very serious negotiations ongoing between certain sectors of the opposition. Of course, one of the problems, as you pointed out before and was discussed with your other guest, is that the opposition have been severely divided for years. Now they've rallied around this figure, but I wouldn't say that that is necessarily stable. At the same time, their one demand has always stayed the same. It was the same under Chavez, which is why they tried to get him out in a coup. They tried to get him out in recall referendums. They tried to get him out through various electoral processes, all of which failed. They tried also with support from the international community, also failed. It has been just to oust that government. It hasn't been to negotiate, to recognize that they exist, that people in Venezuela also support that model, that ideology, and these leaders, you know, Chavez and then Maduro, no matter his failing. So I think that has been a key element. That was what failed previously, and that's what will fail again if there are negotiations. And I think we can look to just that rhetorical extremist discourse of your other guests, calling the Constitution of Venezuela Chavez's Constitution. Let me remind the audience, this is a constitution that was drafted nationwide in Venezuela. There was a constituent assembly of which there were members from all the opposition parties that participated. They wrote the articles. It was then voted on in a national referendum. It was not Chavez's constitution. It is Venezuela's constitution. It is the people's. It was created by the Venezuelan people. The fact that the opposition has chosen not to recognize that constitution, they have chosen not to recognize the government, based also, and that they look to the United States for guidance. They look to the United States for support, which is why Guaido came to the U.S. first to make sure he had their backing, is based also fundamentally in racism and in classism and in this concept of the U.S. is better than us. The U.S. is better than Latin America. We would much rather be allied and aligned with the United States than with our neighbors in Latin America. And I think that's key because one of Chavez's fundamental objectives and successes, although now it's all fallen apart, was, of course, Latin American unity. And now we're seeing the opposite. Now we're seeing the countries realigning with the United States. And so I think it's disgraceful that the Venezuelan opposition looks abroad for support in able to overthrow their government that they chose to boycott the last elections and so therefore was elected by millions of Venezuelans. Okay. And if they continue to choose to ignore the majority of Venezuelans in the country, there will forever be a crisis and destabilization.
Let me go to Vanessa in New York.
It will keep going.
Right, as we speak right I haven't asked my question.
Like
I haven't asked my question yet. Please be patient, all right? Please. Okay, as we speak right now, the four of us, the Venezuelan government has made it clear that it will stand by the government. What are the possibilities of real social strife, a civil war? Again, I point out what Bolton insinuates possible military action here. That is not a good situation when we have the military supporting the government and a foreign power is insinuating that they may use military force against your country. Go ahead, Vanessa, in New York.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for your question. Frankly, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think Venezuelans are very unified behind defending the Constitution. Everybody, every single discourse of the opposition has absolutely respected that 1999 Constitution. Whether you want to call it Chavez's Constitution, it's ours. It is our country's Constitution. It is not in any agenda to disrespect it. It is not in any agenda to change it. We have never said that we would that it would be changed under the new regime. That's not in the cards at all. All we are asking is for the military
except
to come
during
and
the 2002 coup
that
when they threw it in the trash
that they have drafted. Excuse me, it is now my turn. It is now my turn. No one in Venezuela has asked for foreign military intervention. I know that because I speak with the opposition.
Yes, they have.
I am not aligned with any of the political parties, but I have long been involved with this. What has happened, the Latin American countries have been very concerned, some of the neighboring countries, because they have had violence, they have had lynchings, they have had shootings from the massive exodus of Venezuelans who are desperate to leave. So for them, it's a security concern. And the Latin Americans have come together. The Lima Group are basically Latin Americans with Canada thrown in. U.S. is not a part of the Lima Group, and they have been the pointy tip of the diplomatic spear on this. So I think there has been unified, and we are not looking for civil war. We do not want the military to split. We would like them to come on board and to support the Constitution. It is my country. I do not want to see bloodshed. I think we've already have tens of thousands of people have already died in the protests. I was there in Caracas watching people be crushed in 2017 by the Maduro regime.
We have run out of time.
I don't want that anymore.
Fascinating discussion. Many thanks to my guests in New York and in London. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.